Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louis DiBiase here joining you, as always, alongside my co-host, Gino Camilleri. It's a Wednesday edition of the podcast, our second one of the week. We got into Mock Draft Monday earlier this week, and we really liked the haul that we had. Me and Gino did another one of our traditional seven-round Eagles mock drafts that we do every Monday, again on Mock Draft Monday across the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And we're not going to spoil who we picked in that draft. You'll have to go back and check that out at any podcast platform or on LockedOnEagles.com. But Gino, we spiced it up. We did some different stuff in round one and round two, and just the positions that I feel like there's a trend right now with, there's a good idea around the Eagles media and Eagles Twitter with where we think Howie Roseman, this team's going to go. But, you know, we kind of changed it up a little bit, but at the same time, I think we kept it pretty realistic. I think it was different for sure, but it's a scenario that I'm okay with if it played out that way.
100%. And I think this entire draft is going to go a different way than people think. Like, I honestly don't know what's going to happen. I mean, we're in the midst of our Locked On Eagles second annual Eagles Twitter mock draft, right? And we're only through eight picks, and it's freaking insane already. So that's yeah, usually how the draft goes. I mean, we were sitting in my living room doing our live show last year and just waiting for Andre Dillard to come off the board, yep, waiting for Andre Dillard to come off the board. And then he's there, and the Eagles trade up and have their left tackle of the future. So it's unbelievable how this draft really works out. And sometimes it's not always for the better. Sometimes you end up with a Marcus Smith, but hopefully we're in the right direction moving forward this time around, which I really think we do.
And look, obviously the 21st overall pick or wherever they pick first in the first round, or maybe they move back, that's going to be obviously the pick that's mostly discussed. And, you know, that second round draft pick, the Eagles have a third and three fourth round picks. So they have a lot of draft picks early in this draft, Gino. But with how the Eagles have had to draft since they made the trade for Carson Wentz, they've made a lot of their money later on in the process. Mm-hmm. And also not just, you know, through the fourth round, right, getting guys like Avante Maddox and Josh Sweat, but also, you know, later on, I mean, Halepulivahti Vaitai in round five, and, you know, Jalen Mills in round seven. And then you come around, not just the draft itself, but after the draft, undrafted, the rookies that were not picked through undrafted free agency. I mean, they've brought in the likes of Corey Clement, Josh Adams, Boston Scott, they got off the Saints practice squad, but even, you know, TJ Edwards, the list goes on. They have really done a good job of maximizing all of their resources when it comes to bringing in talent through the draft and after the process as well. And Gino, what we're going to get into today that you were talking about a lot, because we're really diving deep into this wide receiver class right now, one of the deepest, I would say the deepest, since that historic 2014 draft class that featured the likes of, you know, Odell Beckham, and Sammy Watkins was actually the first one taken in that, but just a bunch of all pros and pro bowlers. This draft is like that, where not just round one or round two or even round three, when you get deep into day three, there are still a ton of players that both of us like for pass catchers, potentially for Carson Wentz. So we're going to get into, in segment two, we both got two guys that we'll dive into, late round potential gems for the Eagles at receiver, and then we'll do the same thing in segment three. But Gino, I think last year was the perfect example of why you don't take the late rounds and undrafted free agency lightly. I mean, because you never know when your backs are against the wall and you're going to need a guy like Robert Davis or Deonte Burnett and, of course, Greg Ward to step up. And it's not just receiver, but, again, any prospect in general. Corey Clement, what he did for them in 2017. Josh Adams in 2018. Boston Scott in 2019. I mean, you look at running back and TJ Edwards, Anthony Rush. The list goes on. All of these, I guess you could call them misfits, that carry the Eagles to a playoff spot last year. It's an important, you know, it's not just making your money off the first couple of rounds of the draft.
That's 100% correct. I mean, you just look at the statistics of what rosters are made up of, and right, I think I just finished up Zach Moore's Caponomics book, and I think the statistic was that there was, I think, one or two more UDFAs on rosters than there were total first and second round, wow, picks, if I have that correct.
That's crazy. I did not know that.
No, either did I until I read it, and I was utterly shocked by that. I thought the proportions would be way wider, in my opinion, but it just goes to show that that's how you win, and I think this is like a great way to encapsulate everything that this Eagles regime has been in this Howie Roseman 2.0 era. Look at what won them that Super Bowl, the depth of Big V, the depth of going out and signing Corey Graham, the ability to go out and trade for Ronald Darby, all of these moves that didn't come from in-house, but you still have to be able to have that deep scouting class and being able to have that scouting group that is going to find players, not just in free agency, but in undrafted free agency via trades and so on and so forth. And as much as people don't want to give Howie Roseman and his team credit, they are widely regarded around the NFL for having one of the better NFL scouting staffs. They ton of money in there. Howie Roseman has really made it his baby, I would say, to reinvigorate that scouting process and what they have there. And they have Andy Wydell and his team. And I really think that this is the first time we're going to see a true Howie Roseman class. Like, he doesn't have to be there with Chip Kelly. He doesn't have Andy Reid, who's been tenured there for a while. He doesn't have Joe Douglas next to his side. Like, this is going to be the first time I really see what Howie can do. And we're sitting here in extraordinary times, and that teams with scouting staffs that may be a little lighter, they don't put as much money into it, are really going to suffer. And I think the good scouting teams, you're going to see the New England Patriots, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, you go out to the Niners staff right now, they're really going to come away from this class with a lot of help. So you're going to see the discrepancies here between, I believe the Eagles have the best situation going into this draft, Lou. I mean, they're the only team in the division that has the same staff there year over year. And now This is, year five of Doug Peterson? So they're in a much better position than everybody else in their division, especially in this draft. And knowing Howie Roseman, he's a market inefficiency guy. Talk about an all-time contingency market market inefficiency plan with the coronavirus going on. This is just prime pickings for Howie Roseman. I really think they have a chance to add not just in the top of this draft, but in the middle and outside of it in the UDFA class, which I think is going to be filled with guys that have injury question marks, guys that they haven't been able to get their measurables. And you're really going to find some gems in this class. And don't be surprised for Howie Roseman to dole out high dollars in the UDFA class this year.
100%. And I think later on in that process at wide receiver specifically, there are going to be some options that could be, you know, a big piece of this Eagles offense moving forward in 2020 and beyond. Of course, a lot of people have the Eagles double dipping at wide receiver in this draft. Me and you in the mock draft last week had Laviska Shenault in round two when we moved back, and then we also took KJ Hamler. So that has been a trend as of late that maybe the Philadelphia could double dip early at wide receiver. I think they're going to no matter what, but let's say hypothetically they just want to add one guy, you know, early across from DeSean Jackson. But instead of maybe taking another guy in round two that would all but replace a guy like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, or maybe not replace him, you know, down the road because DeSean Jackson's 34, but right now I feel like if you took a guy round one and round two, those are both starters for you next year, and so is DeSean. So let's say you don't want to take that route. Let's say you want to give J.J. every opportunity to, you know, make sure that you don't have to do that moving forward, or even, you know, rely on a guy like Alshon Jeffrey if he comes back from injury and he's on this roster. You can still add a receiver later on as competition for JJ, as insurance, and also for Greg Ward as well. So if that's the route they take, if they want to take a receiver early, like round one or round two, and then maybe wait until round four, five, you know, six or seven, that is when we're going to get deep into this class and see what Philadelphia could do at the wide receiver position. So coming up in segment two, me and Gino, we've got a couple wide receivers that we both really like deep in this class. We'll get into as possibilities for the Eagles, and then we'll get into a couple more in segment three. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri joining you right here on Locked On Eagles. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Guys, today's Locked On Eagles is sponsored by Echelon. To get fit in 2020, you don't have to join a gym or pay a ton for overpriced fitness equipment. The best way to get in the best shape of your life is with Echelon. Go to echelonfit.com to discover their X1 connected fitness bikes that offer a high-quality at-home cycling experience at a less than half the price of a Peloton. Echelon makes beautifully engineered products for everyone, busy moms and dads, first responders, and elite athletes, whatever your activity level. Don't pay a ton for a Peloton. Buy an Echelon bike today for under $1,000. Go to echelonfit.com/LONFL to learn more about their limited time free Apple iPad and complete details of this exclusive offer. Echelon, it's your time. That's Echelon, echelonfit.com/LONFL. Echelonfit.com/LONFL. All right, Eagles fans across the globe, thanks for joining us on another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. We're getting into some late-round possible options for the Philadelphia Eagles at the wide receiver position. And, Gino, you've really been diving deep into the tape the past couple weeks at this position because you're, as you know, the same with me, you're a huge fan of this class. Not just, you know, of course, me and you, we've got our eyes on guys like Brandon Ayuk and, you know, for me, KJ Hamler and LaVisca Chenault. But at the same time, there are a lot of late round players. And I don't even want to just say, you know, like mid round guys, because of course, you know, your boy Antonio Gandy Golden, Devin Duvernay, Van Jefferson, there's a lot of guys day two that are really good options as well. But day three, even, I mean, you were talking about a couple players last week that you really have your eye on that could be steals.
Yeah, I mentioned John Hightower a couple shows ago. I've really put my my love and affection out there for him. I really like what he does. I mean, somebody comped him to Nelson Agholor, which I don't think was a good comp at all, but he does work well in those intermediate areas. He has much better athleticism. He has the ability to just go and get the ball if he needs to. His tracking ability is unreal, but yeah, I've already touched on him. I just think there are so many guys that are just going to fall out of the wayside and really just drop in this class. Like a guy like Kalia Lipscomb. I mean, he had a bad week down in Mobile with some drops and stuff, but in another class, this guy's like a third or fourth round pick, and he's he's probably going to be a sixth or seventh round pick in this class with just how many good guys there are. And guys like Quez Watkins we talked about. But to me, one guy that I really think is like a diamond in the rough, I mentioned him quickly the other day, was Jeff Thomas, the receiver out of Miami. The kid has unbelievable juice. I mean, when you look at him on film, his speed is like at times Tyreek Hill-esque. It's like, oh, there's the cornerback, and then he's 10 yards past him, and just a subtle hesitation step at the top of the stem. Yes, there are a lot of questions with how he's going to hold up at the next level. He's a smaller player. He had off-field issues. He was dismissed from the team at one point or another. But you talk about these guys with question marks that have top-level skill sets at a position of need that are going to be there in the late round drafts. And I fully expect the Eagles to take a route like Green Bay did a couple years ago, addressing their wide receiver position. They didn't pick one in the first three rounds, but then in round four, they went with Jamon Brown at pick 133. At pick 174, they went Marquez Valdes-Scantling. And then at 207, they went Equanimeous St. Brown. So kind of a strategy I could see the Eagles taking. Like, they really like to double dip in their draft classes. You've seen it time and time again with Jordan Matthews and Josh Huff, Sidney Jones and Rasul Douglas. You've just seen it over the years. And if you want to go late in this round, a guy like Jeff Thomas in round six would be one of these guys that they take a risk on. I mean, look at Jordan Mailata. Nobody had any idea who that guy was, and then he garners a draft pick for the Eagles. So they like to take shots on guys that have those skill sets. I've mentioned this last year, and I haven't really brought it up, that in these day three picks, especially the lower rounds, you're looking for one to two elite skill sets that you can really work on. And now you have a new wide receiver coach in there, and Aaron Moorhead, and you talk about a guy who needs a little bit of work, or more like a lot of work in Jeff Thomas, but has an unbelievable athleticism, has an unbelievable profile in regards to speed, just a game-breaking element for this team, somebody that I think you bring him in late, you're going to be happy with your results.
Yeah, I think there's a ton of, I mean, not just wide receiver talent later on in this draft, but specifically what Philadelphia really needs in this offense moving forward is explosiveness, you know, speed, athleticism at this position. And a guy like Jeff Thomas, I mean, you mentioned John Hightower, who you actually introduced me to him from Boise State. I've really liked watching him. You also mentioned a guy that I've really been keen on the past week and a half, and it's Southern Mississippi wide receiver Quez Watkins, who ran an eye-popping 4.35 40 at the NFL Combine, and that made me, again, you don't want to just justify taking a player based on, you know, a 40 yard dash, and sometimes teams actually do that. You know, see the Cincinnati Bengals taking John Ross in the top 10 of the 2017 draft. So I don't want to just say Quez Watkins, you draft him because of that 4.35, but that made me go back to the film, and you can see the speed for sure. The kid plays angry. He's really good at tracking the deep ball. But it's not just that. I mean, when you go back to the film, this guy can make some crazy circus catches, Gino. I mean, the way he can adjust to some passes is, I mean, you add the speed to that ability, it was impressive. I mean, he was a fun watch.
Yeah, for sure. No, I totally agree. I believe you have that added element of, I like guys that can really catch the ball outside of their frame. Like,
yep.
I think we didn't really capitalize on that with JJ all too much last year, but you see these windows that Carson likes to throw into. And I mean, the Miles Sanders touchdown against Washington is one of them that you have to be able to make sure you're going to catch a pass, even if it's outside of the boundary.
For
and
sure.
Guys that have really good body control, I think, is another huge element. So you add that speed and the body control and the ability to track the deep ball, that's a home run. And for me, what I'm looking at and what I usually look at and why we're so high on this class is that we usually tend to drift towards the Eagles' needs, and that's a
right
huge position in need right now. And you talk about the top guys like Jalen Reagor and KJ Hamler. Like, I firmly believe that if you have speed, speed can't be taught, but if you have it and you can get a gem in the late rounds and not have to, like, say, overdraft KJ Hamler, I'm under the same idea I am with Hamler as I was Hollywood Brown last year. Like, I don't want to pick him in that 20th range. Like, I'd be much happier picking him in 35 to 45 ish,
sure,
but not that early. So to me, if you want to go speed, man, there is speed all over this class, and don't just get caught up in the top of it, because there are guys all throughout this class and a lot in UDFA territory as well. And even some of these tight ends you could bring in to be pass catching weapons as well.
Yeah, look, and with Watkins, I think, you know, seeing him be able to catch outside his frame, adjust his body, you know, back shoulder throws, these tight windows with little room for error. I mean, he was able to bring down a bunch of those plays at Southern Miss, and that's something last year in Philadelphia. I mean, Carson Wentz, he's not going to be able to just put it on the money every single play. Sometimes, you know, he's going to get it in that area, and sometimes you just need your wide receivers to make plays for you, and that just never really happened up until, I mean, it was crazy, but I mean, you look at, I think some of the most impressive catches, Geno, came in those final 3 weeks. Obviously, Greg Ward one-on-one with Josh Norman for the win against the Redskins, but just you look at that final game against the Giants to get into the playoffs by winning that game on the same drive. I know the one didn't count, but Wentz throws up like a 40-yard bomb to Robert Davis one-on-one, and Davis just draped with coverage, goes up and brings it down. That gets called back. So what does Wentz do? The next play, rolls to his right, 45 plus yards down the field. He hits Deontay Burnett on a diving catch. And, you know, sometimes you need your receivers to make plays for your quarterback. It can't always be the other way around. And that's why I like Quez Watkins, because he really made his quarterback look good. And speaking of that, Gino, a player that we both like and that has been pretty popular, especially right now, Daniel Jeremiah said the other day he might have the best hands in the draft. We mentioned him briefly on Monday throughout our mock draft. It's SMU wide receiver James Prochet. I know he's only 5'11".
I was going for a run before this, and I knew in my head I was trying to map out who I was going to say, and I knew at some point you were going to bring up James Prochet. Like,
yeah,
it was inevitable.
And look, he doesn't have... He's smaller. At 5'11", you would like him to be faster, for sure. I think he's more... He's kind of like KJ Hill, where he's got more of that short area explosiveness mm-hmm. than the vertical downhill speed. But
he can attack vertical, though.
Yes,
you
got to
make sure he's in the right scheme. Like, he's not going to beat you separation-wise.
No, but
sure,
what he could do, though, like that KJ Hill won't do, is he can go up and bring down contested balls. I mean, that kid has, for 5'11", he's got 10-inch hands. I mean, it's crazy. He brought down some incredible... The amount of one-handed catches he made last year were nuts.
Yeah, he definitely does have the best hands. He has one of the top catch percentages in college football. Coming from that style of offense, I mean, that's like a Memphis style, that American conference where they just let it fly, really. And I'm in love with players from that conference. Like, I've been all over the Memphis players the last couple years with Pollard and Henderson last year. I absolutely adore Antonio Gibson in this class. Would just make for a perfect element in Doug Peterson's offense. And next year with DeMonte Coxey, make sure you're watching some Memphis games this year. Hopefully, fingers crossed, that we actually get football. But DeMonte Coxey is an unreal wide receiver. But in that conference, man, James Prochet let himself be known. And he is a player that you put him into that slot role. Not only is he a slot guy, like KJ Hamler, you have to keep him in the slot for his speed and just to get him into areas that he can win in space. But Prochet has moved around. Like, they put him on the outside. They let him go win contested battles. He's not just a put him in the slot type guy. Like, you can move him all around this offense. And you talk about some of the catches that they could have had last year, like that Nelson Agholor against Atlanta.
Or even against New England, where he has to adjust his body, and he just, it looked like
that's
so
where
painful.
That's where Brochet makes his money is in that situation, because if he gets his hands on it, he's going to catch the ball. And how many years in a row have we been complaining about the drops? So definitely get guys that are sure-handed in this class. And you talk about one. I think he should be drafted higher, but I unfortunately don't. His athleticism is crazy. His hands are crazy for his size. That's what you want in today's NFL, man. Like a 5'11 shifty receiver, that's everything you could ask for. And his hands, dude, like 10-inch hands. He's 5'11", and he has bigger hands than Colin Johnson, who is
seven inches
taller than him.
Yeah, so it's nuts. I like James Prochet a lot. I think he might go higher than how he's being ranked right now. Again, when you have people like Daniel Jeremiah saying things like, you have the best hands in the draft, that's high praise for sure. And he seems like a guy that maybe he's not going to turn into a star, but from the jump, Gino, kind of like Greg Ward last year that just came into the lineup and was instantly Wentz's most reliable target. I just feel like James Prochet could be that player where from the jump he's a reliable target for your quarterback and just someone that you know you can depend on third down, and when you need a catch, a tough one, he can really come through. We got to hit another break here, and then coming up, me and Gino will continue to dive deep into this wide receiver class of the 2020 NFL draft. Don't go anywhere, we'll be right back. All right, Eagles fans, Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri joining you on this Wednesday edition of Locked On Eagles, nerding out on some late round options for the Eagles at wide receiver. We talked about the likes of Quez Watkins, James Prochet, John Hightower, Justin Thomas. There are a lot of good names that Howie Roseman can choose if he decides to only take one wide receiver, maybe in the, let's say, the first three rounds, and then, you know, later on he tries to double dip. Gino, another guy that I was watching Quez Watkins the other day, and then I stumbled upon the tape of Tulane wide receiver Darnell Mooney, and I don't know if you've watched any of Mooney, but this is another player that 4.38 speed, super smooth in and out of breaks. Someone actually, I like the comparison. Someone said that he could be the Deontay Johnson of this draft, where a team like the Steelers bring him in, let's say, round five, and he instantly becomes like a big-time contributor.
Yeah, I could see that. I haven't watched him, but no, I've heard good things about Mooney. I fully believe that Tulane is they're surprisingly putting out some top talent like in this class, too. Mm-hmm. Tulsa as well, a lot of those T schools, but to me that's a guy you can absolutely take a look at there. And that's what I'm saying, like, we don't even know every single receiver that's going to come out of this class. Like, we talked about guys like Tristan Jackson, like he could wind up somewhere. We haven't even mentioned Navy, their former quarterback, and Malcolm Perry, he's going to convert to wide receiver. Same with Lynn Bowden, Kentucky's former quarterback. But man, like, you just pick of the litter what you want, especially in these late rounds. Like, you have big bodied guys if you want to go out and get one, you have quick guys, you have like your gadget type players there as well. It's literally the pick of the litter. And like, one guy who we haven't mentioned, and I don't think many people have mentioned because there are a lot of question marks around him, but Aaron Fuller out of Washington, like, talk about a guy who just has electric feet. He's only 187 pounds and 5'10", but man, like, if he is in a phone booth, he's going to separate and he's going to get open and just has the juice. Like, that's what it comes down to. Like, they need guys that they open up the Popeye can of spinach and can just turn on the burners, because they need speed and separation on this offense, something that they haven't had. Like, even if you bring Alshon back and like you bring JJ back and have him play big minutes, they're still going to need somebody else to separate besides DeSean Jackson. And bringing in one guy early it's going to be great, but what are you going to do when they defend him with two guys? Like, yeah, it'll be good that you have Zach Ertz and stuff as well, but you really need to attack in 11 personnel. Doug Peterson loves to run 11, so you need the bodies there. So bring in more guys late too. Let Deontay Burnett, let Robert Davis, let these young guys compete and just bring more bodies in. And Mooney's another guy that you could just bring him in and right away let him compete for a roster spot. And the new rule with the practice squad, that they can sign guys and send them back without having to go through waivers, I think that's huge as
well.
That
is big. Yeah, that's really big, especially for Philadelphia. Again, the practice squad was one of the main reasons Philadelphia was able to right the ship and make the playoffs in 2019. I think the trend with a lot of the guys we've mentioned is, of course, speed, because you do need a second guy on that offense that can separate down the field that's not DeSean Jackson. And, of course, for the future, too. DeSean's going to be 34 by the start of this upcoming regular season. But also the trend we've mentioned is just players that can make big plays for their quarterback, even when the throw isn't perfect, when they have to adjust their body and make really tough catches, like Quez Watkins, James Prochet. And I think Darnell Mooney is like that. I think, again, the 4.38 speed is what is really eye-popping and what is the most attractive part of his game. But, you know, he was really, I noticed instantly, one of the main things watching his tape yesterday with Tulane, he's so comfortable in back shoulder throws and in making those contested catches. And he's not the biggest guy. He's not even 6 foot. But last year, Gino, in contested plays, he was 11 of 18 in that area, according to Pro Football Focus. And then he's a run after the catch monster, broke 18 tackles on 96 catches, and he averaged 17.6 yards per catch over that span. PFF actually named him the sixth biggest sleeper of the draft. The only thing that I think hurts his stock, he has 23 drops, and that I definitely noticed that was a problem. So, but again, like you said, man, with a lot of these late round guys, you're not getting finished products. You got to take one or two elite traits and hope you can fix the rest.
100%. Like, I like Austin Mack out of Ohio State.
Me too.
And I also like Benjamin Victor. I think we've discussed this many a time.
Yeah, we have.
But the thing with Victor is, like, you're not going to get that speed and athleticism. No. But if you want a guy that can stretch the field with long speed, and if you throw the ball in the air, his wingspan is insane and he can just high point the ball. And then Austin Mack on the other end of it is a pretty good slot receiver. He has that quick ability in and out of his breaks. He's a pretty decent route runner. Those guys are going to be more finished products as they have gone to these big schools like Ohio State that have these programs that, if they're not developed products by now and you don't have the background to know why they're not a developed product, then there's something wrong with that player. But these guys, I fully believe they're going under the radar. We know that KJ Hill, of course, will probably be the top Ohio State receiver taken off the board.
I would think so, yeah.
But Mack had a very good week down in Mobile. Benjamin Victor in the East-West Shrine game just absolutely lit it up. And you talk about guys that come from big programs, something that Howie Roseman really likes to do a lot. He loves his Florida players, too, and a ton of Florida receivers in this draft as well. With you have Tyree Cleveland there. You also have, we know Van Jefferson is there, but the list goes on and on. Freddie Swain as well. This is going to be where do the Eagles want to put their resources in terms of skills over finished product? And I think what Howie said this offseason, saying that he's going to go away from college production and look maybe more towards the skill ability, might allow you to pick a guy like Jeff Thomas or Quez Watkins or a Mooney that just had these blazing fast speed times where you believe that your wide receiver coach can really mold them out of clay, as opposed to a guy like Austin Mack or Benjamin Victor, who they're probably as close to their ceilings as you're going to see.
Sure,
because
yeah,
they're coming out of those schools. But it all comes down to philosophy at that point in the draft.
Yeah, and you know I'm an upside guy. I love potential.
So 100%.
Especially that late in the draft, I think that would be the route I take. But yeah, again, you got to go in with an open mind that Quez Watkins right now, he's a guy that needs work as a route runner, especially against press coverage. He has 4.35 speed, but you know, you look at, we've mentioned KJ Hamler a few times, and what makes him so special is not only that he has that elite speed, but in game, like route running, he plays that fast from the jump, you know, from the minute the ball is snapped. Whereas a guy like Watkins, it takes him a little bit. He's not as fluid in that area. Or again, you mentioned, and I've mentioned a few times in this show, Syracuse wide receiver Tristan Jackson. And a lot, Gino, with those guys, you mentioned like big programs, you know, guys like Benjamin Victor and Austin Mack, they can, or even, I mean, you look at Clemson. I know T. Higgins is all the talk, but DeAndre Overton. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's players at Clemson,
oh, I like
too.
Overton,
that,
man.
Yeah, I mean, later on they benefited from having more complete rosters
in this class. Like,
yeah,
there's so many guys.
And one thing you have to keep an open mind when you're watching the tape of some of these, you know, guys that are at smaller schools like Southern Miss or Tulane or even Tristan Jackson with Syracuse is what they had around them. I mean, it was really hard to watch Jackson's tape at Cuse, Gino, because of how bad that Syracuse offensive line was. There was just so many times where I'm like, holy cow, he didn't even have a chance to get out of his break. I mean, instantly, 1 second, they are after, I think it's DeVito was Syracuse's, that was his quarterback. Yep. So, you know, Jackson transferring from Michigan State to Cuse, it definitely helped. I mean, he had 1,000 yards last year and 11 touchdowns, but I was just saying, get that guy in a more creative offense, getting him in space better with some more time to actually make plays. That's why you got to take everything in consideration here when you're talking about these prospects, and you know what they had on their team is a part of that.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put that. Context is absolutely key, and like we talk about all of these receivers that play at these big schools, like also look at who was lined up next to them. And this is like a big thing for me personally, because I'm in the midst of this Justin Herbert Tua Tagovailoa debate. Yeah. Because I'm a huge Justin Herbert fan, and Justin Herbert was the number six, led the number six team in the country with Juwan Johnson and Johnny Johnson III. Like, Tua had Jerry Jeudy, Jalen Waddle.
Alabama's fourth wide receiver was better than Oregon's number one.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you have to take context into everything. So, yeah. For like a lot of these big wide receivers, like, look at who are the guys on the other side of them. Like, for Tristan Jackson, he's always going to be against the number one cornerback when he's playing teams.
Yes,
like, those are things
was.
You have to take into consideration when you're watching these guys that maybe are the number one guy on their team, or maybe they're the number three or four, but look at what is around them. Look at the situations that they're in. Do they come up on big plays? Do they get separation when it matters? Are they making clutch catches? Like, all of those things matters, and context is key. And as much information as you can get on these players, the better. Hopefully the Eagles have done their work, and I know that they have, and I'm really hoping that they don't just throw caution to the wind and just pick a wide receiver early to pick one, because we've laid out so many guys, and they definitely have more insight than we do on guys that you can get into this system and make them fit right away. Like, there are plenty in the day two and day three that you can get.
Yeah, 100%. And again, use context. Don't just evaluate a player off of, you know, just one thing. And again, it's not even just with these late round guys like Tristan Jackson, who wasn't set up that great to succeed at Syracuse, but even, you know, the top ranked players. I mean, a guy like Jalen Reagor versus Justin Jefferson at LSU and getting to play with Joe Burrow, the accuracy percentage of passes to Justin Jefferson was number one last year at 69%, whereas Jalen Reagor's was 31%. So the quarterback is also a huge part of that process as well for these wide receivers. So like me and Gino have been saying, really with every podcast, is just use every tool to evaluate these guys and just really use context, because sometimes that just context kind of falls out of favor with a lot of people, for sure. So I think that's going to do it, though, for today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. So there's a bunch of names to consider for the Eagles at wide receiver later in this draft. Obviously, me and Gino will continue to get into the early names, because I think it's a foregone conclusion they will take one, at least in round one or in round two. But as for today, those are some names to ponder later on in the draft. And I think Eagles fans, specifically Gino, take this more seriously now, the deep parts of the draft and after the fact, because you saw how crucial that avenue of talent acquisition can be when you need it. And last year the Eagles needed it, and what happened? They won four straight games because they found those players and they made the playoffs.
It's what it comes down to, man. It's not who's there on day one in September. It's not who's there in the 90-man roster. It's those guys that come November and December that you brought them into the building on a tryout when they were UDFA, and then all of a sudden you have Deontay Burnett playing big minutes for you, and you go out and you bring back Shelton Gibson. So
yeah,
it's funny how the world works.
In the playoffs, and, right?
Yeah, it just makes you go and show that teams – they can't all get it done with first and second round players. You can have as many early round picks as you want, but if you're not capitalizing when it matters on day three and in the UDFA class, you're as good as dead when those important games come.
100%, and that's a good way to wrap up this edition of Locked On Eagles. We'll be back tomorrow, so make sure you subscribe to the show on any platform, or of course you can head over to LockedOnEagles.com. We have all our shows available on the site, and then on Twitter. We're always talking birds after the show, at DiBiase LOE and at Gino_LOE. For my co-host Gino Camilleri, I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. As always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.